Hello, welcome to The Catch-Up. Our pal Lawrence Mooney filling in for Ed Cavalli, who yesterday became a dad. Congratulations, little Arnold Martin Cavalli. Robin?
Very cute. We learned a lot about you, Moon, with our Getting to Know Moon Man.
And I've got my own little opener too, Getting to Know Moon.
I liked how much marijuana you got. You and your border patrol mates used to smoke when you were looking after Australia.
It was the 80s, and what else was there to do?
I tell you what, we talked the 70s and 80s this morning. Did I remember when we went back to roller skating rinks of Brisbane, found out Robin loved her roller skating, still got her roller skates, found out there was a lot of love at rinks around Brisbane.
Oh, yeah. You defame your sisters too, which is lovely.
They'll be stoked.
One man literally spent a decade at a roller rink. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
We lived there.
Also, we went behind the block with a former contestant, Trixie, and gave away another trip to Hawaii.
It is all in the catch-up. Enjoy it. We'll catch you tomorrow.
The Volkswagen Amarok V6 Turbo Diesel Sportline Auto. From $55,990, drive away. Conditions at Volkswagen.com.au.
Getting to know.
Yes, Ed Cavalli away for the next couple of weeks on paternity leave, and we're getting to know you a little bit better, Lawrence Mooney.
Yes, well, for a long time I have been a stand-up comedian, and I also moonlight as the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull. Thank you, Malcolm. but when I left school, I was just a drifter, just a chancer, and I think there's a lot of pressure on young people these days to make choices too early. You've got to be able to dream.
Hey, Moon, were you always going to be a comedian straight away? Were you a smart-ass kid at school?
Yeah, I was. I heard the class laugh, and I thought, that is music to my ears. That's what I want to be. But I left school, and Dad said, you're going to have to get a job, son. You're just sitting in front of the Mike Walsh Show chain smoking. So I...
And that is not a career.
I love the Mike Walsh Show. And I loved the Winnie Blue too. And so I became a customs officer. I was an Australian customs service officer. Well, I ended up at the airport, but I was on the waterfront for a bit with an undercover unit called G Group. And we would go and get... that's the truth. We would go and get containers in the dead of night, bring them back to our warehouse, unpack them. And people would always say to me, and once I've told them, you know, I was a customs officer, you know, did you find drugs as a customs officer? Yeah, yeah. And my pat response is, I found a lot more as a comedian than I ever did as a customs officer.
But did you find anything exciting? Is it, as we imagine, that buried in the depths of each, you know, container is something illegal?
Well, there is often something illegal. And the biggest bust that we had was 600 kilograms of compressed marijuana from the Philippines. It was basically pretty easy to find because of the bulk of it, but it was in metal containers inside a whole lot of, you know, rattan and wicker furniture. And
how did you guys find it?
Well, most of it is either good luck or on intelligence, and this was obviously intelligence. They knew that it was coming in, and so we would unpack it and photograph every process and then repack it but replace the marijuana with phone books. People will always say, did you pinch a bit of weed? And yes, we did.
And Chappelle will be filthy.
I think it's outside the statute of limitations now. Yeah. So that was over an Easter weekend. We went home to our Bantu's place and skinned up a couple of fatties and watched The Greatest Story Ever Told. It's like, wow, they're really nailing that guy to a cross.
Still in uniform?
Still in uniform. The weird thing is, when you get paranoid, you look around, you go, oh, there's five customs officers here. I am one too. Oh.
Oh, that's funny. Oh. And then...
Did the dog go home with you on the weekend? Like, well, did you have
I was a drug detector dog handler for a while. I had a dog called Grip. I went to Canberra and trained as a drug detector dog handler. And, yeah, the dog would sometimes look at me and just go, are you serious, mate? meant to be on our side.
The Prime Minister would be so proud of you, Moon Man.
Well, of course, I enjoy going home with Lucy on a Friday night and having a bit of a spliff too, just to take the edge off. Thank you, Malcolm. So, yes, I was a customs officer, and hello to the Minister, Peter Dutton, and Border Force officers all across Australia today. Protecting our front line.
I think that we need to bring this back. Like, seriously. Absolutely.
Oh, well, I tell you what, there's a lot more chapters to this story.
Okay.
Yeah, back in my day.
This is where we get nostalgic for the past. Over the last few weeks, we've done Bullen's Lion Safari Park. You missed that one, Moon. That was huge.
Oh, I love a lion safari park. And because I'm a very disobedient person, you know, anti-authoritarian, I imagine that one day I will die at a lion safari park. Mauled by a lion in front of a sign that says, don't get out of your car.
That's what used to happen. People's valiance used to break down. They'd have the bonnet up and a lion would be poking his head in there too. And that's when, Robert, that's when we said, you know, oh, we should do this every week, have a peek back into the past. Oh,
yeah, but God. I love that because the lions were just so overfed so they wouldn't maul a child. They're just fat, languid lions just going, gee, Australia's awesome. they bring the zebra to you.
I have a personal investment in this one, though, Marto, because I still hold on to my implements that I got for my 12th birthday, which is all about this. I was given a pair of white leather roller skates.
Oh.
And you sent the photo last night. I can't believe that. You said, there's what we're doing today, roller skating rinks of Brisbane, you know, in the old days. Now, at 12 years of age, why would you have hung on to those roller skates?
Because I can still do it. And I did give it a test last night and I quite possibly should have sent that video because they still fit me. But the reason why I did is because my mum still has her ice skates and my mum's 82 and she got her ice skates on her 15th birthday. So I think it's just a family tradition. But I loved roller skating and roller skating rinks. I used to try and get in the speed skating and then the DJ would come on and say, if you can't keep up, get off. Now, so I'd then slink off to the side.
So what would you wear? What are you wearing as a 12-year-old? Have you got a pair of denim flares on or were you wearing leggings and a bit of...
You bet. I was seriously doing the leg warmers, a pair of black leg warmers, a pair of shorts. And they weren't shorty shorts, but they were shorts.
Okay, gold lime hot shorts. Yeah,
and a bit of a off-the-shoulder 80s slouch T-shirt that, in fact, I think I had the Choose Life T-shirt at some point.
Which is Wham, of course, wasn't it?
Which is Wham, yeah.
What an afternoon there was. There was often sessions, as you said. As soon as I see someone who's replied to my tell me about roller skating rinks, as soon as they hit Nutbush city limits, they think about speed skating.
There you go.
Oh, you've got it there.
What about that?
And, of course, as you mentioned before, Brendo, change direction.
Yeah. grab a partner, change direction.
There we go.
Look at that.
And if you could skate backwards, you got extra kind of brownie points and the boys used to notice.
I have a very kind of sad memory of going to a roller skating rink because I was a scout and we went...
Not in your scout's uniform.
Down in the scout's uniform. Oh. And so there were other guys from, you know, local guys skating with girls and I'm down there with the scout group. Oh, yeah. Get out of the way, guys. I'm assistant patrol leader of Rosella's. Anyone needs a tourniquet? I'm here.
Flashing your badges.
Oh, yeah, cooking and entertainment.
There's not many of them left around Brisbane. Can we just think about it? Stafford is the one we used to go to. So we've been Northside all our life. But I walked in there one day. I reckon I was 11 and I hadn't started going. And this really retarded my development as a skater. But I walked in there with my dad, parked the Kingswood, walked into Stafford Skating Rink, still there, still operates. And my two sisters, 3 and 4 years above me, there they were in the grand. There was a little grandstand right in the back corner, both pashing, locking lips with these long haired louts. Early 70s, and Dad just the whole trip home was in silence. He just dropped his shoulders and head just dropped, got in the car, waited for them, not a word on the way home.
I wonder how many children were conceived at a roller rink.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway,
I don't know where the children were conceived.
Have we got someone?
Yeah, Mick of Brackenridge. What do you remember from the roller skating days?
I spent basically all of the 80s and most of the 90s at the Inala skating rink.
Wow.
All of the 80s. The entire decade.
I once actually lived there for 3 months in the actual skating rink in the house upstairs.
Oh, you're fair dinkum. What were you doing there? Were you running the limbo competitions each night?
My mate's auntie was in charge of the place and late at night we used to skate from Inala to Sherwood so we could skate down the big hill at Sherwood.
You were living the dream. Were you in happy days?
Police pulled me up one night because I passed their car going down the hill.
Okay, can I just ask, because this was a very important question when you were a skater, did you have boot skates or sneaker skates?
No, I had the high-cut ones with the lambs wool tongues. I had whatever it was, I had the best. Because...
And can I ask you, Mick, did you ever, you know, pash girls up the back like Marto's sisters?
Record, one all-night skate, I had four girls in one night. 12 hours.
That is awesome.
Good on you, Mick.
Change direction, Mick.
We're looking for your roller rink memories. Can you beat a decade at the roller rink?
Can you beat four in one night? Today, there's still a roller skating rink at Stafford. And where else did
Browns
we say?
Browns Plains. They have a really big roller derby competition at Browns Plains. On Saturday nights, it absolutely goes off.
Derby is where it's full body contact.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah,
competitive.
And the girls like that too, don't they? There's female roller derby teams.
Slinging them up. But that's the upper echelon. Everyone used to just go there for Saturday and Sunday afternoons, but they were everywhere. They were at Mitchelton, they were at Crib Island, they were at
Where's Crib Island?
Where the airport is now, where the Bee Gees grew up. Like, it doesn't even exist anymore. Toombul had one. It seemed that they were all over Brisbane. Let's get some memories going. Who we got?
Okay, Mark of Thornlands. What happened when your auntie took you skating?
Well, yeah, it was a bit of a difficult one. She was a good skater, and I think she skated for Queensland, and I got out there on the skate. Yeah.
How do you skate for Queensland? Like, where's what was
the comp? You know, who was she skating against?
Probably two twos, and, you know, jump out there and do a few twirls.
Right. Like Torval and Dean, but on skates.
Yeah, on the other ones. But I went out there and I tried to skate, and I could not skate. And I couldn't believe it. So then I said, I've had enough of this. I got off the skating rink and I found that I had the left on the right and the right on the left.
That's a groin injury waiting to happen.
Yeah,
eh?
Really. Did it get any better when you changed them over?
No, I just gave up. I crashed a few times and said, see you later.
Okay.
What about those guys that would...
Cleveland too.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, right. Are you a Cleveland? Okay.
Righto. Good. Thank you.
They'd often have tight jeans and they'd skate with their hands behind their backs and they'd be doing that beautiful crossover.
Yeah.
Oh, and you'd just be like
the grapevine.
You'd be two parallel skates going around like a numpty and they'd just go past. It's like, oh, you know, Fonzie.
Kate of North Lakes, tell us your skating memory.
Well, about 30 years ago, they used to have a skating rink on the Redcliffe waterfront, which is currently now where the Anzac War Memorial, the Anzac Memorial
Shrine
site is. Yes.
Wow.
Do anyone remember that?
Yeah, it was open air as well. Like, well, it had sides, but it had, you know, slots, big, I don't know, people could sort of bend over the side and look in, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't full walls.
It was like a skateboard ramp sort of thing before skateboards even arrived here.
No, it had walls at the bottom half, but not at the top half, if that makes sense. But it had a roof.
Did it have somewhere to pash blokes?
I don't know, Marto. I think I was about seven in those days. When that closed down, I used to catch the double-decker bus to the one at Clontarf, which was the massive skating rink, and that's where Ali is now, and that definitely had places to pash boys because I was about 12 by then.
Kate, I know we're talking skating, but are you telling me there was a double-decker bus at the Peninsula years ago?
There was. It was red.
Oh, bless. Just like
no
in the...
And it used to go all the way up and down, like all the way up. Well, I lived at Grant Street, which is near sort of the waterfront. Anyway, it used to go all the way up to Scarborough and back around and come back down to Clontarf to drop people off at the skating rink. And then it'd, you know, pick us up and take us all off again.
I had their own courtesy bus. Awesome.
The old skating rink double-decker.
Kelly of Caboolture, tell us about your roller skating memory.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, Cal.
That's good. It was about in 1981. I was probably about 11 years old, and I was always tall as a child. So my pants never fitted me. They were always above my ankle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So my mum cut them off and made them into knickerbockers.
Oh.
So, one day I was rolling around on the roller skating rink and fell over a few times, and an old lady came up to me and said, "Little girl, you'll split your pants."
Oh, no.
So I was rolling around for I don't know how long with my undies hanging out.
Things that make you who you are today.
That's exactly right. Thank you, Kel. And RJ of Crestmead. Now, what happened at Mount Gravatt?
We used to go to two, Mount Gravatt and the Argonauts. The Argonauts, where it happened down at Springwood, they used to have a big ramp. You used to go to the roof and you had to ring the bell to get your photo taken. Well, there was a guy there that did a bit more and ring the bell. He went through the roof as he went up the ramp. He went too far, straight through the roof.
And then, that is and then awesome. What happened? What happened then?
Then he fell straight down. Right. It was, would have been 12, 13 feet, mate, so it was a good drop.
Oh. Did he hurt himself?
No, he got up laughing, you know. It was sort of a big joke thing. No one had ever hit the roof before.
No one got hurt in the 70s or 80s, did they?
No, mate, it was all about being hard. Today they're all in cotton wool.
Yeah, that's true. Right. I don't think the roller skating rink would have had a public liability insurance policy. I'll call your mum, mate.
Yeah, you can have free skating. Looks like a compound fracture. Year. When you get better, come back. We'll give you a pass.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts in starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Gathering close men of Brisbane, bring it in tight. If you want your relationship to go well, you'll be sensitive to The Bachelor being on tonight and tomorrow night, Robin.
That's
two
right.
Nights to go.
Look at so you go.
So he's got two rows. Oh, I know this is going to be important. Even if you hoo and ha and say, what a stupid show, this is the semi-finals on tonight, the grand final. So funny how they do it the same as NRL and AFL, and I really appreciate that they have a final series for girls. Now, what do you need to know, Robin? I would have said that Laura, she's the winx at the moment with Sportsbet. She is a really tight favourite, and everything we hear, she is going to be the winner. She makes accessories, which is so important when you're looking for a partner.
You have done your homework, Marto. You are going to curl up on the couch in your trackies and your mini Uggs tonight, and you are going to do some good work.
The way I do it, and I figure a lot of blokes do, I just keep walking past the back of the lounge. My wife will be sitting on the lounge. I'll walk past and go to another the room, just make a comment. She goes, shut up if you're not watching it, and then I'll come back about 10 minutes later and go, anything else happened? Which, of course, nothing happens. Who what are the other
no,
two?
No.
Is
okay,
there a Brisbane nanny, did I get told?
Okay, there is a former Hockey Roos by the name of Elise, and she's had a late run because Maddie only kind of discovered her quite late in the piece, and he got on really well with her family.
Where had she been that he discovered it? Like, she was within the house.
No, but
playing hockey.
Yeah. He just came to kind of get to know her a little bit later than the other girls. There is Tara, who is the wonderful nanny who's got this epic personality that he seems to have huge amounts of fun with. But Tara's brother, Troy, gave Maddie J a terrible time at the home visits, and I think that's going to count against her.
Weren't they down, they're living down near Coomera somewhere, and they were at a barbie. So you've had a look at the Bogans. You've got your chance, so that one's gone, isn't it?
Well, I think she'll come second, but I don't think she'll win. And I think Laura is the winner, ably assisted by their Twitter accounts, where they just happened to be in the same snowfield at the same time and just happened to be having coffee just down the road from each other post-event. So
Robin,
I'm suggesting she wins.
Can I ask you a serious question? Because I see they had an interview on some radio station yesterday, and he said that it was nice to see his love, like this is after the show's finished, which is obviously taped ages ago, nude for the first time outside the mansion. Now, would he have asked them to, would you do that? Would they all be nude before?
Maybe that's a little bit of a show.
I don't think the girls would have done that.
They're so close to it anyway when they've got clothes on.
But to suggest when you're down to the final three and you've got 1 in 3 chance of winning, that means 2 in 3 chance of losing, you don't want to necessarily nude up. No. That's something he can wait for and he can earn.
Now, Brendo, you were saying that you had read something.
Inside info.
I read somewhere that whoever he picks in the end sort of semi-rejects him or gets very teary, thinks that they're not ready, and they've had to re-edit it so that it looks all happy happy families. That's what I read.
Massive revelation.
I don't remember if it was a reputable source or not.
Doesn't matter.
But it was in print and therefore probably factual.
Nah.
If you've read it rather than heard it, makes it twice as believable.
If that happened, that would be the biggest cliffhanger ever for the series and would stay in.
All right. Now, you're talking about the hockey girl. I've just read something else. Now you're saying that's important. Now, Elise, the hockey player, she's at 375, but she said this. He's not a morning person. He doesn't get out of bed until 8.30 a.m. Bang.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
How does she know that?
Oh, that's so interesting.
That is so interesting. Righto. Good luck, everyone.
Marto and Robin.
I hope he goes home with Osha. That'd be mine.
Well, that's everyone's dream. That's everyone's dream.
That is a dream.
Okay, this week we've been having lots of conversations about the block and how most tradesmen absolutely hate it. Is that correct, Marto?
Yeah, because it's nonsense and it doesn't take 3 days to build a bathroom. It takes 2 to 3 weeks and it takes more money and it's all just rubbish. And what you don't see is the stuff that really happens.
So what do you think happens?
I know what happens because they get a tradesman come in and do all the work, but that ain't got any drama in it, so they don't show that. And they go, oh, let's go to, what are the beacon lighting? Let's go to the whatever hardware store they use and get some cushions
Home
and some
hardware.
Paint. That's all there is. It's drama thereafter, not the hard work. Because building is actually fairly dull.
Okay, so that is your take on it. Let's go to someone who is actually involved in the block. Trixie and Jono were in the block 2013. Now, Trixie happens to live down the road from me and I see her when we put our bins out. Hello, Trixie.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Can you clear up exactly what goes on in the block? Because you have nothing to do with the show now, do you?
No, I don't have anything to do with the show now. As soon as the hammer went down, we just went back to our lives.
Pull the curtain back and tell us what goes on behind the scenes that we don't see.
It is hard work. It is such hard work. I think what we didn't expect was the mental side of it because you're so sleep deprived. You pretty much start, like just say in a 7 day week, you start with maybe 6 hours sleep, then it might go to five, then it goes to three, and then to two, and then to none. And you're doing that. We did it for 16 weeks straight.
And so they're waking you up and getting you on the job.
Yeah, they come in at 5:30 in the morning with the cameras and purposely wake you up. And but you kind of have to get up anyway because you've just got so much to do.
But what are you doing until 2 a.m. when you're saying you only get 4 hours sleep, 3 hours sleep? What are you doing? Painting?
Yeah, painting, sanding, prepping, cleaning up, like just everything. Everyone thinks that you get these interior stylists in that do all this and they do all that, but it's nothing like that at all.
Marto reckons that they've got a secret team of tradies finishing off for you.
They do all the construction for you.
Yeah, they do. Like, they do. So if you have your team of tradies, that's it. You have to do everything with that team of tradies. And they do let you down and then they do come in odd hours and because of the, power tools and everything, everything like that is real. So if you don't get it done, it's tough biggies.
Did you do the waterproofing? Did you do any of the plumbing? And did you do the tiling? Let's say the wet areas.
All right. We did the waterproofing.
Yeah.
And, but we definitely got, because it's high end, like you want a good finish, you have to get a tiler in to do that because you don't want a dodgy job. Like I think one contestant didn't waterproof, we found out months later.
Oh my God.
A big leak. Yeah. So like, and you just get so frustrated because all they judge you on is how pretty your room looks.
That's
and
right.
They don't look at
those judges are stylists. Trixie, the judges are stylists. They're not construction people.
We always said they need to have a real estate agent, a stylist, and a builder.
That's right.
And judges.
When you finished the process, did you go away with a happy memory or was it just, a bit of taste in your mouth?
A bit of both. Like, we always appreciated the experience. So every day I drive in my driveway and I go, thank God we did the block or I'd never have our home.
Can I also say, Trixie, and I see your house every time I drive past to the end of my street, you are also the house that has constantly got renovations.
You're
painting at the moment, you're building a pool and you're doing it all yourselves.
We're building our own pool. So we went to I had a pool there already and we've just dug it up and got the shell out and he built it on the main sewer system of Victory Pocket.
Oh, Jesus. So you've got to build bridging foundations and everything?
No, we've got to dig a new hole.
Oh, so. God.
Oh, well, good luck, Trixie. And I hope at one point you do finish your house because you've been renovating for a really long time.
10 years, maybe.
Oh, good one, love.
Thank you so much. I hope I've given a little bit of insight.
That's great.
Yeah.
We'll see you at Bunnings, lovely.
Okay. See you.
If you are an Apple aficionado, then on your calendar today there has been a countdown to the release of the brand new iPhone. It is called iPhone X and it's their anniversary phone, apparently. But to tell us more, we have Trevor Long, our tech expert. Hey, Trev.
Morning, team. And here's the thing. You're going to see iPhone X written everywhere, but I've got the breaking news. It's called the iPhone X. And I know that because Tim Cook himself, the CEO, said it. So written iPhone X, but it's called the iPhone 10. It's the 10th anniversary iPhone. It was 10 years ago that Steve Jobs first announced the iPhone, and this was the first ever event being held in Steve Jobs Theatre here at the new Apple headquarters in Cupertino. Quite emotional, to be honest, because they opened the thing with a bit of Steve Jobs audio, but then they got straight into the products announcing three new smartphones that will be available in the next couple of months.
What did they start with? Did they start with, here's the iPhone 8, then the iPhone 8S, and then the 10?
Well, they went, here's a new Apple TV with 4K. Then they went, here's a new Apple Watch with cellular, so you can make phone calls without having your phone near you. And then they said, here's the iPhone 8, here's the iPhone 8 Plus. And then the very, very important words, one more thing. I've only ever heard that once myself before, which was the Apple Watch a couple of years ago. Mm. But it's famous Steve Jobs words at the end of a keynote when they've got something special, and the iPhone 10 was that something special. It's got a huge full screen covering the front of the phone. There's no more home button on the iPhone 10. You can't use your fingerprint to unlock the phone. You use instead facial recognition, 3D facial recognition, they believe, more accurate than fingerprint scanning. So we're going to have to really get used to this one. It's going to be quite a different experience.
So if there's no home button, how do you get to the home page?
Great question. You swipe up. I had a quick play with it before I came on air with you guys. You've got the phone, it's unlocked, and you just swipe up from the bottom and you go straight back to the home page. So it actually works quite seamlessly, but it's going to take a bit of getting used to. Remember when they got rid of the swipe to unlock a couple of years ago? Kind of going to be similar to that. And this will be, I guess, the most sought-after phone. It's also the most expensive iPhone ever at $1,579 starting price.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, Trev.
So that plan goes for 4 years.
you can answer this honestly. Is it any good?
It is. Oh, I mean, it looks beautiful. The screen is stunning because it's an OLED screen. You know, I think the price reflects exactly what's inside the phone. It's going to be the best iPhone ever made. It's going to be the best performing iPhone. There's a whole bunch of things there, but yeah, it's going to be the best iPhone and without question the best smartphone on the market, especially with the camera technology they've added to it this year. So they've done a good job.
Trev, I'm sure it's fabulous, but the facial recognition, can I ask, what about if I'm asleep? Two things, problems. What about if I'm asleep and someone steals my phone and just puts it up to my face? Is A. And B, yep. I've got sunnies and a hat on.
Well, sunnies and a hat, I'll have to check when I get a hold of one, but I would suspect the sunnies will be the problem, probably not the hat. When you're asleep, though, they actually address that, not sleeping, but basically they address the fact that you have to be paying attention to the phone. So not only do you have to have your eyes open, but you have to be looking at it, and that's how it'll unlock. So if you're looking away and someone holds your phone up to your face, it won't unlock until you're looking at it.
If you're sober or drunk or stoned, maybe it won't work
Hopefully an app developer will work out how to detect if someone's drunk and stop them texting.
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't that be genius? Now, that would be worth every single cent.
So, ironically, they're going forward to the future, but with the iPhone X, they're using Roman numerals to indicate it's 10.
Yeah, very future-thinking company, this one, with Roman numerals.
All right, tech guru Trevor Long, thank you for joining us. Wow. EFTM.com.au on you, Trev.
A pleasure.
Hey, guys, I had to go to Sydney yesterday afternoon. You know, I told you that. And I'm still down there now, but it was a good opportunity to go to dinner with my daughter.
Lovely Hilly, who's in Sydney at uni.
Righto. Little suburban boy from Newmarket. We live in there for the last 20 years. I did not realise how many people go out on a Tuesday night in the middle of, went in the centre of Sydney, tried to get into a restaurant. It was a really big restaurant, Mr. Wong's it was called. I figured a Chinese place, be in and out. Done.
Completely chock-a-block.
No, but Mr. Wong's is a really prestigious, like trendy hang, like every night of the week. So if you couldn't get in there, you would never get in there without a booking.
Right. So there would be the compounding factor of not only is it popular in Sydney, but it's a tourist destination too.
Oh, I didn't know any of that, and that's my naivety. So we went around the corner to an Italian place where I feel a lot more comfortable anyway. Walk in. All right, so daughter's done up. I'm just in jeans and a T-shirt. Daughter Hillary is done up. Now, she's nearly 6 foot. She looks okay. You know, scrubs up pretty nicely. I walk in there and I could see there were people who recognised me just from the rugby, okay? You know, I've been doing
you're
Fox
on the telly
Sports
a lot.
Well, just in terms of rugby, and I could see they were rugby-type people. They were, you know, a bit larger people. And they were
really
trying to...
Really getting into the pasta. Really hoeing in.
Well, they're more likely to go and eat Italian than they are Chinese. All right.
Use the cutlery, rugby people.
There was a sense of recognition, and they looked at me, because I had my arm around my daughter. We hadn't seen each other for a little while. I'm down in Sydney. Oh, this is great. We go out to dinner. I could see there was a little bit of, there's Marto. What's he doing with a young girl? He's obviously, there were accusations I could feel being thrown at me with their eyes.
Was there some high-fiving and winking? Good on you, Marto. Still got a champ.
Did it stop your behaviour, though, Marto? Did you take your arm off your daughter? Were you impacted by their stares?
No, but I just knew what they were thinking. I thought, you disgrace. Yeah, I think I'm wrong. As if I could do that.
It's a kind of expected in Sydney, though. There's a great tradition of it. You know, they're thinking, oh, Jeffrey Edelston the second. Yes. Here he comes.
You're exactly right. But why would I, you know... Wouldn't you sneak around a little bit better than that if that's what you were doing?
No.
If you're a sugar daddy, you are parading around.
You're loving it. I mean, I'm really curious because I have a 17-year-old son who won't let me touch him within 10 feet.
Oh, no, that's the rule. Once you get to past a certain age, mum, don't.
I know.
Because you've got to establish this kind of masculinity.
Actually, that's
right. We're all
right.
Labouring under the bogus structure.
daughters love being, you know, with their fathers, but you're right, sons don't like to have...
Oh, no. I keep saying to him, but, mate, you're still my little boy, and he's like...
I reckon... Look, that's a full sentence.
I reckon there's this kind of, you know, anachronistic suggestion that if, you know, you're friendly with mum, it might dictate what your sexuality is, you know, that old thing
really?
Of, like, he's very kind to mum or... Yeah, he loves being around mum.
Interesting enough, though, my son has got his first serious girlfriend and she's gorgeous, but she looks absolutely nothing like me. And I did wonder whether that would be a thing that happens between sons and mothers, that you end up being attracted to someone who is the complete opposite to your own mum.
You don't want someone who looks like your mum, do you? Do not. You don't want to be squinting in the dark and think, oh my God.
I have.
That is so true. Whereas girls often will go for guys like their mum. Oh, like their dad.
That's right. I am attracted to guys that remind me of my father. That's weird.
Really, I think it all makes perfect sense. You do not. Just imagine if somebody said, "Wow, your girlfriend is the image of your mum." It's like, oh no. Bum, bum.
Marto, Ed and Robin, Triple A.
The next billion seconds are the most important in human history as technology transforms the way we live and work. The smartphone, barely a decade old, has given billions access to information and capacities they've never had before. It's changing what we can do, and it's changing the shape of the future. So what does that future look like? Hi, I'm Mark Pesce, the host of The Next Billion Seconds, a new show on Podcast One. Join me as I speak to some of the brightest minds shaping that world, the people who are spending their lives forming that future. We'll hear about their work in helping shape those next billion seconds. Listen at podcastone.com.au or on the Podcast One app.
Hex debt. Okay, so Finn, my eldest, is in year 12, and we are discussing what he's going to do next year. It's one of those conversations that I keep bringing up every couple of weeks just in case I get more than a grunt as an answer.
So I can highly recommend customs officer.
Well, we discovered that from you, maybe. But my question is this, like my advice to him, and of course he is my eldest, so I've not been through this, and I never went to university. I did all of my sort of radio training through experience. So I've never been faced with a hex debt. But certainly now they're saying in the paper that some students are totaling up to $225,000 in HECS debts.
Wow, what an imposition to start off in life with.
It's pretty full on, isn't it? And they're saying...
Is a three-year degree about 50 grand? Is that
that's pretty much.
That's a university degree.
Yeah. And they're saying that taxpayers are owed about $50 billion in student debt across the country because students are then struggling once they've got jobs. They don't have to pay back their HECS debt till they reach the $55,000 threshold.
So that means to me, if I was a student now, if I was a student now, I would just do work part-time until $55,000 so I'd never have to pay the government back.
And
that's what a lot of them are doing, you know that.
No wonder Gen Y can't buy houses. They're already paying off a huge deposit already.
Well, I just want to understand about the whole HECS thing because I'm saying very strongly to young Finn, mate, do not do a degree unless you know what you want to do. Yep. The arts degree of old, of just going to uni and doing arts until you can work out exactly what you want to do, which actually equated to just drinking in the uni bar, is no longer appropriate.
That will send you broke. Well, that's why you've got to be sure you want to go to uni. In the old days, there was no... HECS until, what was it, the late to mid to late 80s, you didn't have to pay for your university degree, so you could stay there forever. Still people staying there forever, but they're just racking up these bills that they'll never pay. It's on the never-never.
My eldest brother's two boys left school and both were, welcomed into university courses if they chose to go. They had good marks, but they both went and did trades. Oh. One's a sparky, one's a plumber. Yeah. They're already financially ahead of all of their mates. They're saving
mates
houses.
From university, unless you're doctors, won't catch up until they're 40, if ever.
Yeah. Okay. So they just went, I don't want the debt. I want to start earning. And they're way ahead.
That's what my son's done. So his sister left school 2 years ago. She decided to go to university. He left end of last year and he's decided to work as a tradesman, labourer and everything else. Mm. He's always got money in his pocket.
Let's find out.
It's a way of, the super rich getting into university courses and keeping the rest of us in trades.
I'm very interested to hear from people whose kids, or maybe they themselves, if you guys have HECS debts.
What has happened thus far this morning, because of the HECS debt discussion, we've discovered that there's not a lot of higher education on air here at this show.
Mate, we talk for a living. Does that not say everything?
I've got a university degree, but I didn't have to pay for mine. I was very fortunate in the old days.
Oh, you've got a uni degree.
But finished it before 87, so you didn't have to pay.
What did you major in?
Human movements.
You're a dance instructor.
Is that interpretive dance?
It's arts for footy players.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's the high achiever amongst us, Moon Man.
I had a Department of Social Security debt in the 90s because I was working as a waiter and claiming the dole, but that's something different.
Comedians are very poor. Comedians don't pay tax either.
How do you handle your HECS debt, Dwayne of Labrador? How do you?
So I got a uni degree and I got about a $20,000 HECS debt. Now, I've never earned above the threshold to have it paid back, but each year you don't pay it back, it goes up.
Interest? Interest, is it?
They call it like inflation. They don't call it interest. It's about 2% each year. So my HECS debt started at about 19 and a half grand, and by the time I paid it off, it was about 22, 23,000.
Yeah. Is that a good day, Dwayne, the day that you realise your HECS debt's gone?
It's awesome.
Hey, are you using your degree to make money as an income?
Yes, I do, but I still don't earn above the $55,000.
Oh, God.
What did you study, Dwayne?
Biomedical science.
Oh, okay. Right. And that's important. You're working in now?
Yes, I work in environmental science at the moment.
Oh, and you've paid your HECS off. Well done, mate.
Yeah, it took me about 4 years. Okay. I just paid off about $5,000 a year.
Good on you, Dwayne.
God, that's mighty. Well played. What about Nadia? Nadia from Brisbane, how much was your HECS debt? How are you going paying it off?
Currently, my HECS debt, I think, is about $25,000. I haven't paid it off yet because I was pressured by my school and my parents so severely that I did PACE and I did so that I could make sure I get into the uni course and ended up being completely in the wrong area that I wanted to be at all.
That's right. You've got to make the right decision now, haven't you? Because otherwise you've got to pay these debts.
Exactly. And I got pressured so badly, definitely by my school, that I was literally having like mental breakdowns. And I find that a lot of schools these days are so ridiculously pressured just so you can get
an OP so that you can...
They
have these statistics that can go to uni, like even public school. It's ridiculous.
Oh, Nadia, that is not a good story.
I know.
But you're sorted now, Nadia. Life is good, apart from the hex debt.
Yeah, so I went to TAFE for childcare so that I could get into the private college for teaching. And then I decided, stuff it. This is not what I want to do. So I was doing, like, children. Decided I was actually doing the wrong species of animal and went to vet nursing.
Vet nursing. Well done. They don't talk back to you.
Thanks, Nadia. And Simon of Nudgee.
The wrong species.
Hey, Simon, tell us about your hex. Well, it's your wife's hex debt.
So my wife's hex debt. So she did teaching. She's just finished paying it off the last few weeks. Now has an extra $300 a fortnight in her pocket.
That's a lot.
How old is she?
She's 37 years old. Now, the problem I find with university degrees, now 20 years ago, having a bachelor was fine. However, if you want to keep up and be best in the market now, you have to have a master's and so on and so forth. It's going to snowball to the point where at some point, in order for you to get that level where you need to pay your hex debt off, you have to have a doctorate, so on and so forth.
And that just keeps adding up.
Be more and more expensive. That's right.
So are you enjoying the extra cash there, Simon?
Absolutely. Hello, Fraser.
Oh, nice one, mate. Hello, Fraser.
And Marto, Ed and Robin on Triple M.
Well, we thought we might struggle for entries, but of course we didn't realise it's low-hanging fruit blokes who aren't romantic. And we've had so many people, but one that really struck us, like a lot did, was Jan from Everton Hills, rang up and said, well, her husband's not the most romantic type. We might go straight to her and find out her story. Jan, how are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Can you remind us what you wrote about your husband? He's in a house full of females.
Yeah, my darling husband, the poor, sweet, romantic, tragic. You know, he's a tradie. He works by himself, but he comes home to four women, that is myself, two daughters and the dog. And tends to forget that we're female, but, you know, likes to offload the blokey, tradie talk to us. But most of all, pillow talk usually consists of not sweet nothings. It's usually about the bull bar he's going to choose or the...
This is where all blokes should live in a commune and just visit their wives for a day or two a week.
What, so they can grunt at each other? So, Jan, you were saying he works on his own. What does he actually do?
He's a tradie. He builds fences and most of the time.
Oh, I love it.
So he's very handy and he's very helpful. So he's not a bad bloke.
Jan, what did you get for your last wedding anniversary?
Big fat zero. The last flowers I got were the ones that I bought for myself on Daffodil Day.
Oh,
but he's
dear.
A good man. He's a good man.
He's a good man with a heart of gold in a complicated land.
That's right.
He's a working class man.
So, Jan, how would you feel about a trip to Hawaii?
I have no words. That would be amazing.
Well, we would very much like you and your wonderful husband, Andrew, to come with us.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not.
No.
Are you serious, Robert?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah. When are we going?
We're going on the 6th of October. You are going to come and join us. We are doing our show live from Hawaii for a whole week, and we would love you and Andrew to join us.
Oh, man, I'm there. Thank you so much.
And I'll talk fences all bloody day with Andrew.
We've just got Andrew on the phone, and obviously he has no idea.
Okay.
So we're going to put him up and then you can have a chat to him.
Guys,
he'll swear.
Something has happened to us in the night. Andrew is actually in emergency with a suspected heart attack.
Oh,
Jesus.
But he's fine. He's just getting tests.
Are you still think you'd be okay to come, Jan?
Yeah. No, but perfectly.
To receive this news this morning.
Do we want to surprise him, Jan?
Yeah. You sure you want to surprise him, Jan?
Yeah.
Well, let's just keep in the context that, you know, yes, he's in a hospital bed and yes, we're about to surprise him, but let's pull him up, Jan, and you have a chat.
No trouble.
Okay, you ready?
Hey, Andrew, are you there?
Yeah, right.
Hey, babe, how are you feeling?
Awful.
Oh, sweetie. Hey, listen, I've got something to tell you.
Yeah.
I've done something, and are you lying down? You okay?
Yeah, I'm in the hospital bed.
All right. I've just won us a trip to Hawaii with Triple M.
Oh, okay.
I've got Triple M listening in as well.
Hey, Andrew. Well, Andrew, it's Marto, Ed and Robin from Triple M, and Mooney's sending in too. Are you okay?
I'm just waiting for some tests to come back. I should be okay.
You had a rough night, champ.
Sorry, I'm not more responsive.
Andrew, if it helps, I can give you a hand. If you got any jobs that are outstanding, mate, and that if that's what's bothering, which I know it would be, give us I'm available to help you out, mate. Good fence builder.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Andrew, as long as you haven't had a heart attack and everything is okay, we would love you to come to Hawaii with us.
That would be excellent. That would be really, really great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Return Jetstar flights from Brisbane to Honolulu, accommodation at Outrigger Reef Waikiki Beach Resort, plus heaps of activities to do while you're there, although you might want to take it easy, Andrew.
It's all about romance, Andrew.
Just lying around on the beach sounds just fine.
Yeah, well done, buddy. What an unexpected turn of events. But congratulations, guys. And Andrew, get better, mate. You. We want you to come.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it'll be great. Thank you.
Good on you, legends. Three spots down, one to go, and that could be you on Friday. You've just got to register your romantic redemption story, triplem.com.au. The last spot up for grabs then. It is Marto, Ed and Robin on Brisbane's Triple M.